Kroger, an annual Boost membership just got even better. Now you can choose from Disney Plus with ads, Hulu with ads, or ESPN Plus on us when you sign up. Plus, enjoy unlimited free delivery, double fuel points, exclusive offers, and free items. Sign up for a Boost membership today. It's an easier way to save, including new streaming options to relax with while we deliver your groceries. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Y'all, I am so excited because Through the Gryffindor is heading back out on tour. Starting in February of 2025, we'll be performing live shows in Charlotte, Orlando, Tampa, Jacksonville, Atlanta, and Nashville. And as always, we will be bringing all of the magic with a tour-long Jay versus Ben trivia showdown with questions submitted and asked by all of you. And then, of course, we will dim the lights for a live recording of Through the Gryffindor. And y'all, these nights have made for some of my all-time favorite since we have started making content on the internet. It is truly a magical evening, nerding out Harry Potter style with the very best community online. Plus, we have a VIP upgrade for each show if you want to come and meet Jay and I, take photos, ask questions, and score an exclusive signed tour poster before the show begins. We would love to see you. We'd love to meet you, and we hope you will come and join us for all of the fun. Tickets are available in the show notes for every show or at supercarlinbrothers.com.
Welcome, dear listeners. I'm Jonathan Carlin.
And I'm Benjamin Carlin.
And we invite you to join us through the Gryffindor, your one-way ticket to the enchanting world of Harry Potter. So grab your wands and dust off your broomsticks and join us as we unlock the riddles inside the Goblet of Fire, Chapter 1, The Riddle House, live in San Diego!
Heck yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
Did you throw the word riddle?
I did, yeah. Well, we got to change the word now because we're out of prisoner.
I don't think you could have picked a better one.
It's a very appropriate one given the start of the book, yeah.
I heard a few gasps.
Yeah. was anyone waiting for it? Did you think I would change it?
Yeah.
Right there. Like, what's it going to be? What's it going to be?
We're going to run out of synonyms for mysteries eventually.
Yeah, I know, right? Yeah, what other words for secret are there? I don't know. Yeah.
Oh boy! Well, I am Jay. I'm so excited for this particular chapter. This is an incredibly unique chapter.
It is.
There could be no mistake about it. This is, I believe, it's just only one of four total in the whole series that are not told from Harry's perspective.
Right. So all of them are chapter ones as well.
I think in Half Blood Prince, it's chapters one and two.
Oh, is it?
I can't remember if it's one and two or one and three.
It's one and two.
So we will have chapter one of Philosopher's Stone, The Boy Who Lived. We will have chapter one from Goblet of Fire, The Riddle House.
Yes.
We'll have chapter one from Half-Blood Prince, The Other Minister.
Yep.
And chapter two from Half-Blood Prince, Spinner's End.
Yeah. All right. So this is we'll be halfway there.
I know. But this will be kind of interesting because it means since episode one of the podcast, we have not had one of these chapters.
Yeah, you're right. Not since the first episode.
Yes. And now we have to do it in front of a live audience.
I think we got it. This one should be good. Although, like, at least the other chapter is, like, from the Dursleys' point of view, who you come back to.
That's true.
Whereas, like, Frank Bryce, not really that important the rest of the time.
I mean, we see him once more.
We do see him again. That's true. That's true. No doubt. I was really hoping in, like, Fantastic Beasts, like, if we'd ever gotten the fourth and fifth, you'd get, like, a big war scene at some point, and at some point, like, one of the commanders would be like, Bryce, you're out! Go to the medic!
I know, it would have been so perfect.
And he'd be like, hey, that was that guy.
Wait a second, we know who that was. We know him. He goes on to work for Tom Riddle's house.
Yeah, that'd be great.
Well, Tom Riddle Sr.'s house.
Tom Riddle Sr.'s house, but that doesn't happen. Anyway, so we're going to kick off here, chapter one in Goblet of Fire. We got to talk about the artwork, the chapter art, as always, which is really good. I think, look, we can show you guys this time.
I know, yeah, how fun. Yeah, I gave it a 10 out of 10. But what we're seeing here, we get an introduction to Nagini. We have the big chair that Voldemort is sitting on in front of the crackling fire hearth with the rug on the floor and everything. I just think this is just a fun one because
it's good.
Like, the chair for for like a book read is kind of fascinating, because it's like, especially on like the like subsequent reads, it's like, you know who's sitting in that chair.
Right. And like when you start this right now, like you, it just looks like a snake going by a chair.
Right. Right. Yeah. But like the dramatic buildup to like the turn, it's like, oh, it's about to happen.
Oh, it's going down. It's going down.
We're going to see little tiny baby Voldemort.
I also love the depiction. I know. Little baby Voldemort.
Little baby Voldemort.
I will need feeding in the nightworm tank. Okay. What are you, an infant, dude? Come on. Oh, man. I also love the depiction of the snake slithering, not across the ground, like horizontally, but vertically.
Yeah. Yes. It has like a very like...
Every time.
It happened again.
Every time.
But Nagini is like slithering on the ground like this.
Up and down, yeah.
Like a waveform.
Yeah.
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 Yeah. Interesting way for a snake to move, but it's a magical snake, so.
I guess so. I guess it'd be funny if this is actually how Nagini is supposed to move.
It would be the clunkiest thing in the world. Right, like, what's wrong with that?
It'd be
snake?
A little whimsical, I think. Yeah.
It would be. It would be. It would add something kind of funny to Nagini there. Yes. Okay. So are you ready? You ready to dive on in?
I'm ready to dive on in. So we kick off. The villagers of Little Hangleton still called it the Riddle House, which already, I like the title, because obviously the Riddle House is the home of the Riddles, like Tom Riddle and his parents or whatever.
Yes.
But it is also like a double meaning in that there's just a riddle about the house. They don't know what happened.
Yes.
There's just a big mystery.
Yeah. To the villagers of Little Hangleton, this is a huge riddle. It's a huge thing that's like sort of like permeated for 50 years. It's like the talk of the town. Like whatever happened.
52 years.
52. That's a 52. Good click.
They
good.
Keep saying 50, but it's 52.
It's 52.
Yeah.
I agree with you. So we'll get to that here in just a
second.
We'll
get to that in a second, yeah. So we get some description of the house. It stood on a hill overlooking the village, some of its windows boarded, which to me sounds similar to the Shrieking Shack, which is like kind of where we just left at the end of the last book.
Yeah, it's kind of interesting that Peter really likes to frequent this style of home.
This is like his jam.
Yeah, like when he's like on the Airbnb website, he's sort of like boarded up windows.
Right, yeah. You know? That's what he's going for.
Yes. This is the vibes that he wants.
He likes that abandoned home core, you know.
Right, yes. It's in right now.
It's in, yeah.
That's what they say.
Right.
Let's see here. But yeah, it describes the Riddle House as damp, derelict, and unoccupied.
Yes, but also once a fine-looking manor and easily the largest and grandest building around for miles. So like it sounds like it's like a mixture of like Malfoy Manor and the Shrieking Shack.
Yes. A strange juxtaposition.
Yes.
I think I said that really strangely.
Right.
Juxtaposition.
Juxtaposition.
Better on take two.
You got it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The Little Hangletons all agreed that that old house was creepy.
Yeah.
Half a century ago, something strange and horrible had happened there. Something that the older inhabitants of the village still liked to discuss when topics for gossip were scarce.
Yeah. What a fun town. Yeah, nothing else to talk about over here.
Right.
I like how it also mentions, like, nobody was quite sure what the truth was anymore. And I think that's interesting because, like, when it says anymore, what it means is they never knew.
They never did.
Yeah, they never knew at all.
There was never a time where it was there.
Yeah.
Every version of the tale, however, started in the same place 50 years before at daybreak on a fine summer's morning when the Riddle House had still been well-kept and impressive. A maid had entered the drawing room to find all three Riddles dead. So there's a couple of notes about this particular sentence. One is, as you mentioned before, is that 50 years prior to 1994 would place us in 1944, but we know that this event actually happens in 1942 due to the events in Half-Blood Prince,
right,
where he is already wearing the ring.
He's already wearing the ring
when he's in Slughorn's
class. He's in Slughorn's office, so he must have already, because this event is what he does before going back to his uncle Morfin and modifying his memory and stealing the ring.
Yes, exactly.
And then there's also the weird phrasing of like during his 16th year he did this, which actually means he was 15.
Right.
Yeah.
Yes.
So math, it's actually 52 years, not 50 years. But you can imagine the people of the town aren't like sticklers for such things. They're just like, well, 50 years ago.
Sure. Yeah. I don't know that like leading up until this particular moment in time, that would have been like, you know, 46 years ago, 47 years ago.
Exactly. Just sort of round numbers are easier to work with.
Yes.
Also means means that if it's 1942, Grindelwald is pretty much at large when this happens.
Yeah, he's still at the height of his power because it won't be until 1945 when he ultimately falls, which kind of to go back to our conversation about Fantastic Beasts, this is another one of those like big details where you've got to wonder to what extent like Tom Riddle was observing, learning, you know, understanding anything about what Grindelwald is doing.
Mm-hmm.
But he doesn't really seem to know like the symbol of the Deathly Hallows. So it doesn't seem like he wasn't
learning from him directly or anything.
Precisely. There's no world where he could have been like, you know, Grindelwald's apprentice, but it is rather shocking that the like passage of the torch as far as like dark leaders in the wizarding world is so close to one another.
So close. Like, I mean, it's already started. Like Voldemort's on the rise before Grindelwald's even defeated.
Exactly. So that kind of reminds me of like the beginning of like The Incredibles where Bob Parr is like, I just cleaned up this mess. Can it just stay clean for 5 minutes?
You almost have to imagine, like, Voldemort must be planning then to also take down Grindelwald because, like, he would be a big deal at this point.
He would be. Yeah, if anything, he would be like a challenger to his own power.
Right, yeah. Yeah. He's like, that guy's going down.
Yeah.
Thanks, Dumbledore. That was really helpful.
Yes. Yeah. So the other thing that I do think is kind of interesting about this, though, is that the specific phrasing, it says, at daybreak on a fine summer's morning, because what the maid will then end up saying is that they were lying there with their eyes wide open, cold as ice, still in their dinner things. So just as a small detail to keep track of means that they were lying there since the night before.
Right. Yeah.
So she's just discovered them the following morning.
In the morning. Yep. And it says lying there with their eyes wide open, cold as ice still. Yeah. Cold as ice. I highlighted the cold as ice because later on when Voldemort talks, like Frank is going to like feel like a cold sensation.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah. Like when he's talking. So I'm sort of like, is like, what about Avada Kedavra is going to make them like cold as ice? Is weird.
Is coldness attached to dark magic?
Is like coldness attached to it in some capacity? I don't know.
Okay, something to keep an eye on.
Something to sort of keep looking on there. But I love how the people of the town just openly hate the Riddles. Like they're what does it say? They had ill-disguised excitement about and shocked curiosity about this news. So it's like they are obviously like, oh no, there was a murder, but they're also like, that's pretty exciting. Something happened here. All right.
It's normally boring, but not today.
Not today. Yeah. Yep. Nobody wasted their breath pretending to feel very sad about the Riddles, for they had been most unpopular. And this is, this is one, like, when I always listen to it, I feel like my brain must just skate over this particular line because, like, you always know that Voldemort's mom was not so great and that she, like, used a love potion to seduce Tom Riddle and then sort of, like, lifted him from the spell. And you always knew that he, like, abandons her even though she's pregnant, but you're sort of like, well, you sort of were, like, taken in under, like, not so great measures.
Right. Like, yeah. I mean, he wasn't exactly there of his own accord.
And
so it's never been that difficult to chalk up Voldemort's like inability to love to sort of this like unusual circumstance under which he came to be.
Yeah.
But it seems to be the case. Yeah. Especially it says elderly Mr. and Mrs. Riddle had been rich, snobbish, and rude. And their grown up son, Tom, had been, if anything, worse.
Yes. So it's like, actually, he's also just a sucky guy.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. It's almost amazing that somehow deep inside of Tom Riddle, he had the ability to be like so charming and charismatic and like to win everybody over in such a way. Like, you know, I mean, I don't know where he's getting that from.
Yeah. Not from his mom, not from his dad, but it's also like the way they describe the Riddles is also extremely Malfoy-ish.
Yes.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Like it's just like mom, dad, spoiled son.
Right.
All of them rich, snobbish, rude.
Right. Yeah. Right. Yep. They're like the muggle versions of the Malfoys.
Yes.
Almost to the letter.
Yeah. What?
It runs in the family.
It runs in the family.
It runs in the family. It most certainly does.
Yes. So then we learned the name of the pub where all the villagers just love to gossip. It's the Hanged Man, which great trivia, if anyone wants to write that one down.
I got it wrong on this very tour, It would have been nice if I'd already read this chapter.
Yeah, the Hanged Man, which I think is a great bar for this particular town because it just sort of sounds scary, like someone died, obviously. But also it's called Little Hangleton, so it's also just sort of like named after the town. town at the same time.
It is. But another detail that I found about this in particular, because I was curious about the name The Hanged Man, and it's also a tarot card, which can be like interpreted different ways based on how the card is laid.
Oh.
So in the card, the depiction of the card itself, it's not usually like a traditional morbid hanging like you'd imagine. It's like somebody hanging from like their foot from a tree. And if it's laid like upwards, it can mean a myriad of like positive things. And if it's laid downward, then it means a myriad of negative things.
Right. So this is probably a downward one.
This is definitely a downward one for sure. But what I think is also interesting about it is that like the lightning struck tower where Dumbledore will eventually die is also like a tarot card.
Yeah.
So the ways in which these details are like woven into the fabric of the story is just kind of fun.
That
kind of like
fun.
A neat like little Easter egg.
That's pretty cool. So anyway, we're all at the Hanged Man. Everyone's talking about the murders, and the Riddle's cook arrived dramatically in their midst to announce to a suddenly silent pub, a man called Frank Bryce had been arrested.
Yes, and the reaction to Frank being the potential killer here is it's really kind of fascinating, but almost maybe exactly what you may expect in like a small town where everybody kind of knows each other. Like,
yeah.
It seems like 50% of the people are like, what? No, Frank, it couldn't be.
He wouldn't. Yeah, the initial response is, Frank, cried several people, never. But by never, they mean like maybe 5 minutes from now, I'll think otherwise.
Yes, yes, exactly. Yeah. And the name Frank itself, I find to be kind of interesting just because Voldemort certainly like resembles or reflects a Hitler-esque version or leader. And Frank Bryce would have been fighting in World War II, and the name Frank is rather important to that battle, especially like with like Anne Frank.
Right, so, sure, yeah.
Like the selection of the name of Frank, I'm kind of like, I wonder if that's any accident. I don't know that that's intentional, but it was kind of like, that's interesting.
But it's there.
Yeah.
Yeah. Let's see. So we learned that Frank had come back from the war with a very sick leg, dislike of crowds and loud noises. And then the townspeople immediately start like filling in their own sorts of blanks, saying, I always thought he was odd. Let's see. Unfriendly, like, I'm sure if I offered him a couple once, I'm offered it 100 times. Never wanted to mix. And so this is like, this is what the cook is saying, and it's after her fourth sherry. And this is like a recurring theme in the Harry Potter books, where like one really drunk woman's story can really affect a lot of people. Because like, this is how Marge is.
Yes.
And that goes pretty crazy. This is how Aunt Muriel is at the wedding.
Right.
And she's just like, they just like just love to sit down and spread some rumors.
Yeah.
And like really effectively poison people's minds.
Yes. Yeah. Yes.
And so now, yeah, the cook doing the same thing on her fourth sherry, which is also Trelawney's drink of choice, just for what it's worth.
Of course, hers is cooking sherry.
Cooking sherry, yeah, yes, yeah. Yes, of course.
And somebody does try to retort this. She's just basically like, ah, now he had a hard war, Frank. He likes the quiet life. That's no reason to. And then the cook's immediately like, who else had a key to the back door then? There's been a spare key hanging in the gardener's cottage far back as I can remember. Nobody forced that door last night. No broken windows. All Frank had to do was creep up to the big house while we was all sleeping.
Yeah, but so first of all, while we was all sleeping means that the cook also lives at the house, just to like point out the wealth of the Riddles. Not only do they have a live-in cook, but a live-in gardener, or at least on the grounds. But also, her story here immediately starts to contradict her own story, where she says, like, all Frank had to do was creep up to the big house while we were all sleeping, even though they were clearly found in their dinner clothes at the table.
Right.
Like,
that. Like what do they do? Like serve the food and then instantly go to sleep?
Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
Like, yeah. No, yeah. So you're right. Yeah, that doesn't add up very quickly.
Yeah, doesn't add up very good. Also, just because she points out that he clearly has the means to do it, but doesn't bring up any kind of motivation for him to do it at all.
Right.
They just sort of lays out the grounds that it was possible, and that seems to be enough for the entire pub, because then the next line is the villagers exchange dark looks, and then the tide really begins to turn, and it's like, I always thought he had a nasty look about him, right enough. And then, like, yeah, this is like, it says, war turned him funny, if you ask me. I wouldn't like to get on the wrong side of Frank. Horrible temper. Just sort of everyone just chiming in left and right.
Major confirmation bias.
Confirmation bias. And it's like, it's interesting what's happening in this town, and like the 1940s, where they don't have, like, you know, like great means of communication or dispersing information,
sure,
or anything. But like this is like a small scale of what will happen in the next book. Like this is all just town gossip, and it like poisons the mind of all the people here against the riddles forever, against Frank Bryce forever. Right. But like next year is going to be the ministry basically doing the same thing, but rather than gossip, it's like very intentional propaganda
through the against Daily Prophet.
Yeah, through like a very official means, not just rumors at the bar. And you can already see that like 50 years later, Frank is still dealing with this.
Yes.
And this is just based on like the rumor mill.
Exactly.
So Harry is up against a lot more when it happens to him.
There is a line here that I just desperately wish we had more information, though. It says, "Horrible temper," said Dot, nodding fervently. "I remember him. I remember when he was a kid," and I'm like, "What?
What
happened
he,
when he was
do?
A kid? What did he do?"
Yeah,
we
yeah.
need that story.
Come on, Dot.
Yeah,
spill the beans.
Right, we need the tea.
Yeah, we need the tea.
The cuppa.
The cuppa. Exactly. But so yeah, by the following morning, everyone's pretty sure that Frank Bryce killed the Riddles. And then I love that even though this happened in Little Hangleton, he's over in Great Hangleton, which I think is just funny that they're right next to each other.
Yes.
Being questioned by the police. And he actually brings up seeing a teenage boy, a stranger, a dark-haired and pale, which is obviously actually Voldemort, who did do the murders.
Yeah, Frank over here being a fantastic witness, by
fantastic
the way.
Fantastic witness.
He's like, he hits the nail on the head. That is Tom Riddle.
Yeah. So despite him literally seeing the person who did it and giving a very good description of them, they're like, yeah, we don't care.
It was
you. It was you.
It also must be the case that young Tom Riddle doesn't see Frank as well.
Yeah.
Because he likely would have killed him.
He probably would have killed him.
Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. So Frank doing a great job at seeing him, but not at convincing the police. But then the police can't actually convict him of anything because the report comes back and they had not been poisoned, stabbed, shot, strangled, suffocated, or as far as they could tell, harmed at all. And I love just sort of the comedic undertones. Like the report continued in a tone of unmistakable bewilderment that the Riddles all appear to be in perfect health, apart from the fact that they were dead. Which just
I remember as a kid just dying laughing at that line. I was like, "No, that was good. That was good."
Dying,
little whimsy.
Yeah. But then it says, "I guess they were determined to find something wrong with the bodies," and it's like they looked scared. Yeah.
Yeah, that's it. Like, but who had ever heard of three people being frightened to death?
Yeah, which it says that there, but I want to say in the last, like, in the last book, like, people talked about the Grimm, like, scaring people to death.
True, yeah.
So that was like, well, I guess it doesn't not happen in the wizarding world.
But they don't know about the Grimm.
Yeah. They don't know about the Grimm, these muggles.
They just think they're big black dogs.
Yeah, big black dogs.
Which, to be fair, sometimes, usually, they are.
Yeah. Sometimes they are.
The whole ass book.
Yeah.
Every time.
Every time it was a Grimm, it was actually a black dog.
Yep.
And then it says the Riddles were buried in the Little Hangleton churchyard, which is like, this is like great disguise, because even though this ends up being like, it looks like it's just sort of describing what happened in the story, but this sets up like the location of the like climax of the book.
Yes. It's like that. What they just said is like where the most important details will go down is in the Little Hangleton churchyard.
Yes. And it happens there because they're buried there because Voldemort needs like a bone from his father.
Yes.
Per
yes.
the potion.
Exactly. Exactly. Then the story kind of goes to some incredible lengths to convince you that there is, in fact, a plausible reason why Frank Bryce, to everyone's surprise, would return to his cottage on the grounds of the Riddle House for the next 50 years.
Yeah.
He never leaves.
Never leaves. Really surprising.
Yeah.
Because, like, Dot, back at the Hanged Man, as far as I'm concerned, he killed him, but I don't care what the police say. It's like, well, okay, Dot, good for you. Good for you. You're very wrong. What's interesting about this, though, is that it's like, it kind of reminds me of Sirius, because he's in Azkaban, and he's like, I knew I was innocent.
Right.
Like, that kept me sane. That's the same thing for Frank. He's like, I did not do it.
Right. I happened to find it.
And yes. I like this job, so I'm going to keep it.
Right, exactly. But interestingly, despite the fact that Frank does stay, the next families do not. So it says he stayed to tend the garden for the next family who lived at the Riddle House, and the next, for neither family stayed long. Which, that's another one that kind of reminds me of, like, the Defense Against the Dark Arts curse, where it's like this is another place that, like, Tom Riddle has touched that nobody seems to be able to, like, properly stake up residence.
Seems like he doesn't want them to stay there.
Precisely. Yeah. Yes.
Yeah. Has a nasty feeling about the place.
Right.
Yeah, so, like, the question is, like, did he curse the house? And, like, I'm inclined to think yes.
It wouldn't surprise me in the slightest.
Yeah. And then there's also this, the very next line. We kind of have like a little chapter break here, but it says, "The wealthy man who owned the Riddle House these days neither lived there nor put it to any use. The village said he kept it for tax reasons, although no one knew what those were." So, one, I think that's a funny line because I feel like that's just like a thing people say all the time. Like, oh, yeah, you can get these like tax breaks or whatever. And it's always like, how does that work? And it's like, I don't know.
Nobody knows how tax breaks work. No one knows
tax breaks? Whatever. Yeah. Okay. If you say so, whatever. But my question is, Ben, who do you think the wealthy man is?
Lucius
Malfoy. That's kind of what I think too.
Yeah, like I mean, you said it earlier. It's like it kind of like the manor itself kind of reminds you of like Malfoy Manor,
right?
And this feels like the kind of thing that like Lucius would do, and especially like being a wizard attempting to explain it to anyone,
right?
It's just sort of tax reasons.
Just tax reasons.
Just sort of like vagueism.
Right. That way Voldemort like knows what's up with the house, which is also like a murder scene, I guess.
Right.
And he can, I guess, eventually use it, which he does.
Right. True.
But yeah, then no one else will move in there either way. So it does seem like that. The only thing that makes me think maybe it's not Malfoy is that the wealthy owner continued to pay Frank. And I just sort of feel like Malfoy wouldn't be caught dead paying a muggle person.
True.
You know?
True.
Yeah.
That's a fair point.
Yeah.
That's a fair point. Yeah. And that would probably be like the biggest reason. It's just, I desperately want it to be the case that whoever this wealthy man is someone we know.
I know. Like, I want it to be someone we know.
Yeah. Otherwise, it's just sort of like an off-page, just, like...
Yeah, convenience.
Yes.
Yeah.
Exactly. Exactly. Yeah. So, if we need to come up with something, then that's going to be my headcanon.
That's going to be my headcanon.
Until we find something better.
Exactly. Okay. I will also bring up here that it mentions that Frank was nearing his 77th birthday now. Very deaf. His bad leg... stiffer than ever before. Just want to highlight very deaf because Frank is about to do some amazing hearing.
Yeah. Okay.
Amazing hearing.
It's just a buildup of earwax.
Just a buildup of earwax.
Yes.
No problem.
The way that he will eventually go at such earwax makes me feel as though he's about to damage his eardrums.
I know. He is digging.
He was in there.
In
excruciating detail.
He is going to be overhearing a whispered conversation through a door.
Yeah, yeah.
As a very deaf person with perfect clarity.
Right.
Understanding made up words and all.
Right.
So,
right.
Yeah, he's...
It also says that Frank was nearing his 77th birthday. What do we always say? What number is it always?
Seven.
Yep. And so this is 77. So remember that for trivia.
Yeah. Also, I like that it describes his struggle here. It says, even though the weeds were starting to creep up on him, try as he might to suppress them. I just highlighted that. I was like, yeah, hashtag relatable.
Oh,
just the weeds, man.
Are you referring to your very own garden?
I'm referring to my very own garden. Yeah.
How are the rabbits?
Oh, the rabbits are bad.
Yeah.
And the deer. I know. I got to give deer a lot of praise in this book, like, because Harry and the stag and his mom and Snape and all that. But, like, in real life.
Not a fan.
Not my friends. Eating all my tomatoes and lettuce.
You know, the thing that I like, though, so yeah, like, let's see. It says, weeds were not the only things, though, that Frank had to contend with either. Boys from the village had made a habit of throwing stones through the windows of the Riddle House. They rode their bicycles over the lawns that Frank worked so hard to keep smooth. Once or twice, they broke into the old house for a dare. They knew that old Frank's devotion to the house and grounds amounted to almost an obsession, and it amused them to see him limping across the garden, brandishing a stick and yelling croakily at them. It's like, Frank is working... Like, it will later say that he has not entered the house in years.
I know!
So he is meticulously maintaining the grounds of what in this same chapter is described as a boarded up, derelict house.
Yeah.
Can you imagine an incredibly well-maintained, like, landscape in front of this super rundown house?
I know. So basically what it sounds like. You know what? I don't know why I didn't realize. It's like, Frank is basically like the Muggle Hagrid. He's like the keeper of keys. He's the groundskeeper.
He is the keeper of keys.
Yeah. The rusted old key.
The keeper of key.
Exactly.
Dang it.
Well, Voldemort loves to mess with the groundskeeper.
He sure does.
He sure does.
I've expelled one. If I've expelled one, I've killed them all.
Exactly. Exactly.
Except for Hagrid.
Yeah. But so let's see. But he, for Frank's part, it says, he believed the boys tormented him because they liked their parents and grandparents, thought him a murderer, which is like kind of what we were saying earlier. Like the lie never dies for Frank. Yeah. Like no matter, like he can't escape it, which I mean, maybe if he moved, which I don't know why he doesn't.
I know. But, yeah. Find another house.
Yeah.
Like, But maybe this is perfect for him. He just wants to be like,
just
kept
wants
to himself.
Be alone.
Yeah. It's a good way to keep
exactly.
yourself.
So let's see. One night, though, he looks up and he sees that some boys have started a fire in the house. And I'm going to circle back to that. But just remember, that's what he sees. Boys have started fire in the house, and this is why he heads up there. And he thinks he knows exactly what's going on, which he does not at all. And then it says Frank had no telephone, which I'm like, what? Are you kidding? You don't have a phone, Frank? It's 1994, man. Like,
yeah. Where is this maid / cook / whoever offering him so many cuppas?
I know.
Just in passing.
Walking straight down. I guess I don't know. Yeah. Either way. Even if he had one, maybe it doesn't matter because he deeply mistrusted the police. Which this is just sort of like the government and the authority figure is always hard to trust in Harry Potter.
Yeah. But there's also a lot going on that like would require you. That needs to be said so that you don't ask the question, like, why didn't he just, like, call the cops?
Yes.
You know? Yeah. So it's like, why did he stay there for 50 years? Like, why did he continue to maintain the grounds? Like, you know, why doesn't he just call someone to help him? It's like, well, he doesn't have a phone and he doesn't trust them. Yeah. So it's like by the time you're like, okay, yeah, fair enough.
Fair enough. I guess so.
He's just going to go up there.
Either way, so he decides he's got to get fully dressed, removing a rusty old key from its hook by the door. So the cook was correct that Frank did have a key, I guess, that she was aware of.
Right.
Heads off into the night. The front door of the Riddle House bore no sign of being forced or anything, which means that like Wormtail and Voldemort have entered probably magically and didn't have to like break in or anything. But Frank knows about a secret door, secret entrance.
Ooh.
He reached a door almost completely hidden by ivy, took out the old key and put it into lock and opened the door noiselessly. And I was like, noiselessly? Are you kidding?
Have you ever put a rusty key in a lock?
You put a rusty key in a lock on a door that has grown ivy over it, and he's just like stealthing inside?
Yeah.
No chance.
I've never opened a well-oiled lock noiselessly.
I know. Yeah. Like, me trying to get in my own home noiselessly, pretty impossible.
Yes.
Yeah. So, I don't know what Frank is doing here. Maybe he's a ninja. I don't know. He's noiselessly entered the house.
Yes.
We'll see. And then this is where it says, Frank had not entered the house for many years, which is bonkers. The man lives, he only staying outside.
Yeah.
Maintaining it all, doesn't enter, even though no one lives there. I'd be in that house all the time, man. All the time.
You think Frank's ever up there just like sliding around in his socks?
No, I don't.
Would you be?
I would be. Yeah. I'd be like, you know what? I basically live here. This is pretty much my house.
It's my house now.
Basically, yeah. Let's see. He works his way through the house, which he still remembers the layout of, and starts to climb the stairs, blessing the dust that lay thick upon the stone. But like, it can't be that thick because certainly like Wormtail walked up the stairs, right?
Yeah. And surely Nagini's already been up and down these stairs at least once.
At least once.
Plus, as we've already established, Frank is a ninja and doesn't need the aid of dust.
Doesn't need it because, you know what? Muffled the sound of his feet and walking stick.
Oh, yes.
His people with limps.
Yeah. Walking stick's notoriously
unbelievably
quiet.
Yes.
Objects.
Walking.
Yes.
Quiet object. Absolutely. But see, then he finally makes it up. He sees the light at the end of the hall, and notices that the fire he now saw had been lit in the grate. This surprised him. And that sentence surprised me, Ben.
It did.
You know? Because what that means is that he doesn't think the fire was in the grate. What he thinks is the whole house is on fire. Right? And his answer was to slowly walk into the house and this means he's not calling the police. He's not calling the fire department.
Yeah.
Because he thinks what does he think he's going to do up here? Like, he doesn't have water. He doesn't have anything.
He left it in the water bottle.
He thinks he's confronting arsonists. You know? Like, I don't know. He's surprised it's in the grate, which means he thinks it wasn't in the grate, which means he thinks the whole house is on fire.
I highlighted and underlined the exact same phrase, and I was just like, what?
Yeah.
No, one page ago, we've covered this.
Yes. Yes. Well, there we go. Then he stops moving and listened intently and extremely well to what is happening inside the room with his deaf ears. I can't believe how much he can hear.
I know. I mean, it's impressive.
Have you ever like tried eavesdropping on people?
Yeah.
Yeah. Not easy.
It's not easy.
It's not easy.
Yeah. Oh man. Yeah. Let's see. Yeah. Yeah, no. So then we hear Wormtail talking, and it says, "There's a little more in the bottle, my lord. If you are still hungry."
Boy.
And it's like, this is just weird.
It's just weird. It's just weird.
It's hard to picture.
It makes it sound like a baby bottle.
It does.
It does.
Like, what other kind of bottle is it?
I know. It mentions like a clinking when he puts it down.
You think that they've got Nagini's milked venom?
Through the Gryffindor is sponsored by Shopify. Outside of the world of podcasting and theory crafting, I also share another business endeavor with my wife, Alice, who has always had a deep love for all things secondhand. So together we created a company called Nude, not 100 yards from where Jay and I started Super Carlin Brothers. Nude, in case you're wondering, is like the word new, but in the past tense, so you get nude. But, you know, the idea is to wear clothes. And the business has been so well received in our hometown, but when we launched our website using Shopify, something kind of amazing happened. A whole new world of customers were unlocked, all with their own unique taste. Pieces that got overlooked in the store were being snatched up online, and it completely changed what kinds of things were making it into the store. So not only has it been great for business, but Shopify also has so many amazing tools to help you as your company grows. One of my favorite features is this like heat map of the globe that shows you little dots for everywhere in the world that people are visiting the site from. What Shopify can do is take a small town business and open up a whole world of potential customers. So upgrade your business to get the same checkout that we use with Shopify. Sign up for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/griffin. That's all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/griffin to upgrade your selling today. Shopify.com/griffin.
At Kroger, an annual Boost membership just got even better. Now you can choose from Disney Plus with ads, Hulu with ads, or ESPN Plus on us when you sign up. Plus, enjoy unlimited free delivery, double fuel points, exclusive offers, and free items. Sign up for a Boost membership today. It's an easier way to save, including new streaming options to relax with while we deliver your groceries. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Huh? In like a brown bottle, like a glass beer bottle or something.
Like a beer bottle. He's just sipping it.
Yeah.
So he's nursing some snake milk.
We need like an illustration from someone of baby Voldemort holding a beer bottle full of snake milk on a recliner in front of a fire that is notably in a grate.
Snake milk might be my least two favorite words next to each other. Oh my gosh, this is terrible. But so this is when he hears a Voldemort speak for the first time. He says, something about that voice made the sparse hairs on the back of Frank's neck stand up. But it's described as being strangely high-pitched and cold as a sudden blast of icy wind. So it's like, that's what it sounds cold or feels cold.
That's a good question. You know, can we back up a little bit to the sparse hairs on the back of Frank's neck?
Sparse. I wanted to know how hairy his neck was.
I did too. Yeah. 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 It's like, oh, I got it now. I can picture that.
Yeah. Yeah. But this is, you know, Frank is interested by what he hears. He turns his right ear towards the door to better hear it.
Yes.
The better to hear it. Yeah. He's on it. He can hear so well. And they start talking about Nagini. Voldemort says, where's Nagini? Which is the first mention of Nagini we get. So new character alert.
A new character alert. But also, before they ask about Nagini, it also just says, move me closer to the fire, Wormtail.
Yeah.
Which I've just always thought it was interesting that for whatever reason, Voldemort just like uses his Marauder's nickname.
I know. Yeah. He doesn't call him Peter or Pettigrew or anything.
Right. Yeah. He's just, and I think he's Wormtail for the rest of the series.
Yeah. I don't think anyone calls him Peter for the rest of it. Yeah.
That's so odd.
It is weird.
And he doesn't like really transform into a rat.
He doesn't, which is unbelievable.
Yeah.
Yes. Like he references again. He says he can disguise himself quite well, meaning that he can turn into a rat. But like we don't see him do it ever again.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. So, anyway. But yeah, so where is Nagini? Said the cold voice. And to which Peter, Wormtail, says, I don't know, my lord. She set out to explore the house, I think. To which I was like, fun.
Fun. Just adventurous little snake, like, I'm going to check out the kitchen.
Yeah, yeah. You ever rent a house and you get there and you're like, I'm going to go look at stuff.
Right, yeah.
I'm going to open the drawers.
I'm going to see what these people have, you know? What do they got in this house? And then Voldemort says, you will milk her before we retire, Wormtail. Like, to which, my goodness, what does Frank think Nagini is at this point? A cow?
Surprised I missed the cow on the way up the stairs.
Like, huh, could have sworn. Now I'm imagining what Frank is like. There's a cow exploring the house? Okay.
Sure.
I mean, no wonder they can't hear him. and Voldemort says, I will need feeding in the night. Just like, dude, you're like a tiny little infant baby.
He is. A dream feed.
Yeah. Needs the dream feed. Yeah.
Any parents in the audience know what a dream feed
is? Yeah. Oh, the dream feed's so good. Let's see. So then Wormtail asks him how long they're going to be staying at the Riddle House. Voldemort says a week, perhaps longer, by which I'm pretty sure he means like all year, right? A week, maybe 50. I don't know, Wormtail.
We'll be here now.
Yeah, we're here now. It's fine. And like he describes it as, it's moderately comfortable.
Yeah.
Like, dude, it's a mansion.
Yes.
Like,
but it also, what was the smell that we had earlier? His nostrils full of the smell of decay.
Well, Voldemort doesn't have a nose. I mean,
that's a good point.
You know?
This is not an issue.
Not a problem for him.
Okay.
Yeah.
I stand corrected.
There we go. So he says, it would be foolish to act before the Quidditch World Cup. Voldemort is going to make a bunch of vague claims about why he can't do certain parts of his plan. And certain parts, like one, that don't make sense. And other parts never come to pass.
I know.
And are openly incorrect and misleading to the reader.
Yes.
So I don't like that.
I don't like that.
So he says, it would be foolish to act before the Quidditch World Cup. Okay, very good.
Okay, hang on. Here's the description. Frank inserted a gnarled finger into his ear and rotated, owing no doubt to a buildup of earwax.
I appreciate the
more details than we needed.
We know also, about Frank's neck hair, about his earwax, about his fingers,
his knee.
Alas, earwax. Yeah. Yes, bravo.
I bet we just set a record for the number of times earwax has ever been said in this room.
In this room, yeah. No doubt.
We're not done yet either.
Yeah.
We can do this all night.
Yeah. But so Frank is able to pick out the word Quidditch, which was not a word at all. And then he says, Voldemort continues to explain the Quidditch World Cup. Why should we wait until the Quidditch World Cup is over? Which to me, it sounds like this plan is pretty fleshed out at this point. So I can't believe that they would have gotten this far into planning and not discussed this aspect of it.
Yeah, so Wormtail is like, the Quidditch World Cup, my lord? And it's like, what did you guys talk about on the trip? Like,
yeah,
you know, like,
right.
You must have been.
What does that have to do with anything?
It must have taken some time. Surely you guys had some small talk.
Yeah, obviously not.
who are you pulling for?
Right. Yeah. Who do you think Voldemort's rooting for?
Bulgaria.
Probably.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. But Voldemort's reasoning for why it has to take place after the Quidditch World Cup is that Ministry of Magic will be on duty, on the watch, checking for signs of unusual activity, checking and double-checking identities, which, one, this is a huge hint that you need to be looking for is someone who has a false identity in the book.
Sure.
Which
yes.
is there.
Oh, good point. Yeah, yes.
Very good. That is a good clue right there for you, the reader. However, it says they will be obsessed with security lest the muggles notice anything, so we need to wait. Right, but so he says they'll be checking and double-checking identities, but one, that's not true. They don't actually check identities at all when Harry and company arrive at the Quidditch World Cup, right?
In fact, I'm pretty sure it's a muggle who's checking them in.
Yeah, it's a muggle who's checking them in. And then on top of that, what he's saying is we don't want to be doing this. Like, we don't want to kidnap and start impersonating Moody prior to the Quidditch World Cup because they'll be double-checking identities. Right? That's what he's concerned about.
Yes.
Which, one, just don't go. And two, Moody doesn't go anyway.
True.
So, like, this is really not a problem.
Yeah, not, this is, it's really not, there's no concern here. It would have been fine.
It would have been fine. They could have done this. In fact, it would have probably been really good because everyone will be at the Quidditch World Cup.
True.
Yeah.
Great time. Moody will be completely unprotected. This house completely alone.
Yeah.
Meanwhile, Frank stopped trying to clear out his ear.
Yeah.
It comes next. Here was the next line. He had distinctly heard the words Ministry of Magic, Wizards, and Muggles. Plainly, each of these expressions meant something secret. And Frank could think of only two sorts of people who would speak in code. Spies.
Yeah.
And criminals.
Yeah, spies and criminals. That's
spies
it.
And criminals.
Yep.
Yeah.
That,
and Fred and George.
They are criminals. You're right. He's got that much of them figured out. And then Wormtail brings up a very excellent point that I feel like a lot of people often forget or don't think is true, but Wormtail says, it could be done without Harry Potter, my lord. So what he's talking about is at the end of the book when he has to take the blood of the enemy forcibly taken to put into the potion, and Voldemort wants to use Harry Potter. That's what the whole plan is about. Wormtail's like, that could really be just about anybody. And Voldemort tells the Death Eaters at the end, Wormtail brings it up here, and I will get into such arguments with people that are like, it had to be Harry. And I'm like, it really didn't. And if Voldemort had just not, actually, it wouldn't really matter. Even if he hadn't used Harry, he'd still have the problem of the sacrificial love just being active against him. That by taking it into him, he can, like, at least physically touch him, but now he's anchoring Harry.
Right.
And I guess he can still hit him with spells because he does. But
right.
He's anchoring Harry now. So he just moves the spell from Harry to himself. So it doesn't really help.
Right. But he specifically says the words, I could use another wizard, said the voice, the cold voice softly. That is true. And you're right. I highlighted this and wrote the exact same note because I was like, we get comments all the time where people are like, no, it had to be Harry. And I'm like, am I? Is,
nope.
Yeah. It's right
there.
Says
it right here.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, anyway, just thought I'd point that out to you guys. Now you can fight the good fight.
Yeah, there you go. Be our comment warriors.
Yeah.
Go, fight, win! No, I'm just kidding. Anyway, so Wormtail then says, laying hands on Harry Potter would be so difficult. He is so well protected. And to which Voldemort at this point in time is just kind of like screwing with Wormtail. And he's like, and so you volunteered to go and fetch me a substitute. I wonder, perhaps the task of nursing me has become wearisome for you, Wormtail. Could the suggestion of abandoning the plan be nothing more than an attempt to desert me?
Yeah, which this is interesting because like Voldemort is about to say like, do not lie to me, I can always tell. And then he lays out that like, Wormtail, you're regretting you've ever returned. I revolt you. I see you flinch when you look at me. I feel you shudder when you touch me. It just sounds like, are you guys like dating or something? Like, what is going on?
It's like, I'm imagining Wormtail like on the ride, sort of like slowly like extending his hand.
Yeah, but so what he says, could the suggestion of abandoning the plot be nothing more than an attempt to desert me? I feel like he must be correct in what Wormtail is actually thinking, which means that like Wormtail is trying to desert him. Like,
yes.
He is regretting his decision. He's like, this was a bad move.
I'm going back to life as a rat.
Yep, going back to life as a rat. Also, let's see. I love that Wormtail earlier said, laying hands on Harry Potter would be so difficult. He is so well protected. I'm like, not for nothing, Wormtail, but you slept next to him for like 3 years. So, like, you had a moment there.
Yes, there was a window. There was a window.
Yeah. Also, Voldemort says, I can always tell when people are lying to me, which is not entirely true because he cannot tell with Snape.
Yes,
but
yes.
Pretty much everyone else.
I think this goes to show, like, he's using legilimency here, which means that Wormtail is not nearly as proficient at occlumency as Snape definitely is, which Snape is definitely great at.
Yeah, he's very good at it.
Yeah.
Yep.
Your devotion is nothing more than cowardice, which I think is kind of funny because, like, even Voldemort sees straight through him. And then he says,
absolutely.
You would not be here if you had anywhere else to go, which, back in Prisoner, Sirius literally says this, like, word for word.
Yeah.
He's just the big bad now, and so now you have to go and be in his playground.
Right. He's like, you know that we're going to kill you, so you have to go to him for protection, and that's all you're doing. So, and Voldemort's pretty aware of that as well. So, also, but then he continues to berate him and says, how am I to survive without you when I need feeding every few hours? Who is the milk Nagini? Which, like, dude, he's really concerned about this. Like, Like, because one, when I need feeding every few hours, you need feeding? Like, you can't die, dude. Like, who's been feeding you for the past 13 years? Like, I don't, who's, it's so weird. But
Yeah. Frank is probably sitting there like, man, how did I miss the cow?
No, I did not see it. Did not see it.
Oh, man. But yeah, so I suppose on some level what's going on here, though, is that, yeah, he's been restored to the rudimentary body. This is a new development since he was occupying Quirrell's body. So yeah. It does seem like probably, because then he does say, like, I am no stronger, and a few days alone would be enough to rob me of the little health I have regained under your clumsy care. Silence! Yeah, so I think what's going on here is that, like, Wormtail or Voldemort or some combination of which have gotten him to a state that he hasn't previously been in, and Wormtail is maintaining it on some level. Bless you. Did somebody sneeze? No? Oh, well, for anybody who sneezes in the future,
yeah,
y'all can save that one.
There we go. All right, so Voldemort continues. He says, I have my reasons for using the boy. And his reasons are, of course, because when he was occupying Quirrell, Harry touched his face and it, like, burned him. And he and when he tried to attack him with the wand, it backfired. So what he's trying to do is get inside of the sacrificial love, yes, which he will sort of do, but obviously it doesn't work out.
Right.
And then I also like this, though. He says, I've explained to you, I will use no other. I've waited 13 years. A few more months will make no difference. Because, like, the thing you have to remember about Voldemort is, like, he is immortal at the moment, and, like, he, in his mind, he will always be immortal. So, like, he is very patient. Like, he does not mind taking forever to do stuff.
Yes, yeah, for sure. That's like, one of the things we have to come back to a lot, which is that, like, yeah, Voldemort, his goal is immortality, so in the scheme of things, this is mostly, he views it as, like, just, like, a detour. And,
yeah.
And once it's taken care of, it'll be taken care of forever, and then he can just live forever and ever after that.
Exactly.
Then there's a line, it says, Wormtail, courage you will find unless you wish to feel the full extent of Lord Voldemort's wrath. So we were just talking about somebody with this about this detail in the meet and greet, especially when we go back to our What If Harry Was in Slytherin series.
Yeah.
Where one of the things that, like, we always thought would have been cool is if, like, the silver hand that Voldemort gives to Wormtail, if he had, like, integrated more, like, silver wounds into more of
his... Yeah, it is, like, it is alarming to me that, like, I it seems to me you'd think, like, a lot of the Death Eaters would have, like, silver adornments and there.
And then they're almost like badges of honor amongst the Death Eaters, but they're also, like, Voldemort's own private way of, like, you know, ruling with, like, a iron fist.
A silver fist.
Silver fist.
Yeah.
Yeah. Good save.
Yeah.
Got my periodic table wrong.
Yeah. Jeez, man. Yeah, but, like, because then he's like, you know, oh, if you ever abandon me, you'll basically be killed by this curse or whatever.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yep, exactly. Good way to keep people in check as
good
well.
Good keep people in check, but also a good way to lose people if they do start turning on you.
Right. Yeah. But then Wormtail is like, my lord, I must speak. All through our journey, I have gone over the plan in my head. The plan that apparently didn't include anything about the Quidditch World Cup.
Yeah.
You know, that still hasn't come up. Nope. First mention of Bertha Jorkins' disappearance will not go unnoticed for long. And if we proceed, if I murder...
This is the part where we start getting into, like, shenanigans here. Because according to Wormtail, Voldemort wants him to murder someone, to which I highlighted, I was like, who? Because they don't murder anybody.
I know.
Yeah.
It's I think it says, like, come, Wormtail, one more death and our path to Harry Potter is clear. And I'm like, do they mean Moody?
I think they must mean Moody, but, like, they don't end up killing him.
Is this, like, not having thought through the plan sufficiently or not realized that, like, Polyjuice... I mean, maybe they thought that, like, they didn't need him alive for the Polyjuice to work?
Maybe. I don't know. Like, I guess we... But at the same rate, like, Voldemort has thought through, like, potential security precautions at the Quidditch World Cup, but not how Polyjuice potion works.
Right.
You know?
Yes.
Like, seems unlikely. And they keep bringing it up. It's like, we will murder one more person, absolutely. And it's like, they don't kill anyone. Like, Barty Crouch Jr. is killed, but it's not by Wormtail, and it's because he escapes. Like, they're not intending to kill him, they just have to kill him.
Yes, yes. Yeah. And then, and like, you know, I guess like you could say like Cedric dies, but like Cedric is completely unplanned.
Yeah, they're not like right here, be like, can't wait till Harry gets there with one other kid. And then we'll kill him, and then the path to Harry will be clear.
That spare is going down.
That spare is going down.
Yep, yep.
Yeah.
But he does say, after the one more death, he says, by that time, my faithful servant will have rejoined us. And now he's, of course, referring to Barty Crouch Jr.
Yeah.
And the big detail here is that the information that we would have learned, that Voldemort would have learned from Bertha Jorkins, is that Barty Crouch Jr. is still alive. And
yes.
is basically effectively imprisoned by his father in their own house. And that is the detail that Bertha Jorkins was able to uncover by going by the Crouch household and like basically entering for like paperwork to be signed, and in the process heard Winky talking to Barty
Blinky.
Crouch. Blinky.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Wonky.
Wonky.
Yeah.
Yeah. And basically, Barty Crouch Sr. places like a very serious memory charm on her, on Bertha Jorkins.
Oh.
Is that ringing a bell?
It is now, because I was going to... Okay, yeah, go ahead.
Okay, yes. So this is going to come up here in a minute, because there is a detail that I also thought I was very confused about,
yeah.
but that is what it is in reference
okay.
to.
Okay, so, yes. I was also confused about the same thing. We'll get to it. Yeah, but then she also knows about the Triwizard Tournament, which they're... than making most of their plans around.
Yes, yes.
Yeah.
Also true. Yep. So we'll get back to that in just 1 second. Then Voldemort really just starts like kind of dishing on Peter there. He's Wormtail, I need someone with brains. Somebody whose loyalty has never wavered. And you unfortunately fulfill neither requirement.
I know. Like, ouch, man.
I literally wrote ouch.
Yeah.
I was like, damn, I don't like Peter, but like, darn.
Definitely don't like Peter. But like, Peter, like, to his like Gryffindor name, kind of stands up for himself here. You know, it takes a great deal of you know, courage to stand up to your enemies, a great deal more to stand up to your infant baby demon lord. Boyfriend, I guess. I don't know.
As the old phrase goes.
As the old phrase goes.
Yeah. Yeah, Wormtail's like, I found you. I was the one who found you.
Yeah.
I brought you Bertha Jorkins.
Yeah.
And I was like, bold defiance here, man.
Yeah. I like about the bringing up of Bertha Jorkins here is that for the rest of the book, everyone's going to treat her disappearance like, yep, she's an idiot. I'm not surprised she got lost. But it's like, you can see like how, like it creates tension for the rest of the book because you know that Voldemort killed her.
Yes.
And like everyone else is just like, who cares?
Right, yeah. Right. It's kind of fascinating. You're right. Because like we're told right away in the first chapter that she's dead. And then her name comes up like 11,000 more times.
Yeah.
And everybody's like, what happened to her? But I suppose a big piece of what's going on there is that Barty Crouch Sr. is also like probably not trying that hard to find her.
Right.
Because he's like responsible for wiping her mind.
Yeah, right. You know? There's also that. Let's see. But so it sounds like even though Wormtail brought Bertha Jorkins to Voldemort, that he didn't know how useful she would be. He's like, he says, I thought she might be useful, my lord. And he says, liar. To which then I'm like, but then why did he bring her?
Yeah.
You know?
He's like,
look what I found.
I went down to the pub. I found a woman.
I know.
It's like, nice one.
Good. All right. Wormtail. Yeah, yeah. I don't know why. Like, what is he lying about here? But either way, they are able to torture information out of Bertha Jorkins. Let's see. This is where he also sets up another part here. He says, like, even though you were dumb and didn't know how useful she would be and are lying about thinking she was useful, you did do good, and I will allow you to perform an essential task for me, one that many of my followers would give their right hands to perform. Like, he's so sly.
It's on the nostrils.
I know. On the old face slits, as it were.
That's terrible.
Yeah.
Face slits.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
That's going to give me nightmares. Tonight.
I love that. And Wormtail's like, what is it? And he's like, I just said it, Wormtail. He's like, that joke is going to land in like 9 months. It's going to be amazing.
Wormtail's like, I get it now.
Yeah.
He's Dang like, it.
Oh, no. Yeah.
Oh, was... man. You will have the honor of being just as useful as Bertha Jorkins. And yeah. I'm like, oh, boy.
Oh, boy. Oh, boy. To which Wormtail, like, he's like, what, you're going to kill me?
Why would I kill you? I killed Bertha Jorkins because I had to. She was fit for nothing after my questioning. Quite useless. Which goes to show, basically, where Voldemort, like, ranks, you know, people who deserve to live.
Yeah, like, are they useful to him? No.
If not,
therefore, not even worth being alive.
Yes, exactly. Yeah.
Dead.
Yeah.
So, there you go. And then he says, yeah, what wizards who are supposed to be dead would do well not to run to Ministry of Magic, which is at Wayside Inns. So basically just saying, like, you know, Wormtail can do nothing right at all.
Yes, yeah. Yes. And then Wormtail mutters something so quietly that Frank could not hear it.
Probably, unbelievable, probably, if you ask me, with his ninja ears back there. Yeah.
That earwax, he just didn't get it all.
Yeah.
We have to assume that he's saying something along the lines of, like, we could, like, obliviate him, you know? Yeah. Like, that could be fine. And then, because what Voldemort responds with is, we could have modified her memory, but memory charms can be broken by a powerful wizard. As I proved when I questioned her, it would be an insult to her memory not to use the information I extracted from her Wormtail.
Yeah, so this, I think, was the line you were talking about earlier, because I was like, wait, does that mean someone modified her memory? But you're right. It's Barty Crouch Sr.
Barty Crouch Sr. has modified her memory, and then they unmodified it, to which, again, kind of begs the question, how on earth did they know that she was going to be useful at all?
I know. Yeah, don't know.
Like, because she didn't even remember what she didn't remember.
Right. They had to, like, break through a memory charm.
Yes.
To get to the information. Yeah, so, yeah, really...
Wormtail got lucky with Bertha Jorkins.
He absolutely
I don't mean that as it sounded, either.
Unless...
took me a second.
Pierce Polk has been, you know. Yeah. Yeah, this is really why Voldemort killed Bertha Jorkins. He's like, Wormtail, you have eyes for another woman.
Yeah. We're coming unhinged.
I know. This is a weird show. Oh, man. Here we go. Boy. So what I think here is that Frank is realizing that the man with a cold voice has killed a woman, which is interesting because, like, he also saw teenage Tom Riddle lurking around the house and has just no idea it's the same guy who's in the room now. Which
he
I
really
think is,
grew down since he last saw him.
Yeah. Yes, yeah. Really grew down. Little baby. Yeah.
But Frank does recognize, he says, this boy, Harry Potter, whoever he was in danger.
Probably not important.
How significant could it be?
Yeah, come on. Yeah, this kid, whatever.
Yeah. But yeah, so Frank basically knew at this point what he needed to do. He was going to creep out of the house very stealthily and head straight for the telephone box in the village.
In the village?
In the village.
Yeah.
This is 1994. I guess payphones would have been a thing.
I guess so.
Yeah.
Absolutely, for sure. 1994. Yeah. I'm just like, there's not a phone at the house? You know, like downstairs?
Maybe it was disconnected.
I guess so. Yeah. I guess maybe there's not, like, power running to the house or anything.
Right. Yeah.
Plus, you don't want to accidentally run into the cow or anything.
Yeah. Maybe the cow's on the phone.
Maybe the cow's on the phone. Exactly. So he's got quite a journey ahead of him if he's going to make it down to the police. Although I'd love to know what would happen if he'd made it to the police, because they'd just all be dead.
Yeah.
But, yeah. Then Voldemort continues, one more murder. My faithful servant at Hogwarts...
Harry Potter is as good as mine.
Yeah, yep. But it's like he brings up this one more murder again. It's like you were not planning another murder. This is just misleading.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. But then at this point, it's time for Voldemort's ears to be on fire because he says, "But quiet, I think I hear Nagini," and it's probably because she's slithering like this.
Yeah, I know. Right. Just
ka-dunk, 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 ka-dunk.
Right, can't believe Frank didn't hear it. He started making noises, so he starts hissing at Nagini, and is hearing Frank is like, "What on earth is happening in there?" Because this is Voldemort just sprinkling parcel mouth to Nagini, and then Frank, I'm surprised Voldemort could hear it before Frank, but Frank can hear the snake slithering on the floor as well, because. I mean, yeah, I swear. I don't know why it's even mentioned that he can't hear well, because it's just not
He
true.
Hears everything.
He hears everything.
Right. Yeah.
My goodness. But he sees the gigantic snake at least 12 feet long.
Because when it's not 7...
It's 12.
It's 13. Yeah. And when it's not 13, it's 12.
Yeah. There you go.
And if it's not 12, it's 11. That's right.
That's the room Harry stays in at the Leakey Cauldron, room 11.
Is it?
Yeah, right?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, because we had that question a few nights ago.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Jay gets a point.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yep. It's somewhere in there.
Yep. So Frank is freaked out by the sight of the snake, as I think all of us would be. And he's like, what on earth do I do? If I stay where I'm going to stay, I'm going to get killed by the snake. And if I don't, then these people in the room are going to kill me. And it's like, one of those is going to happen for sure. For sure.
You have narrowed in on the likely possibilities.
That's what's going to happen here. The Nagini comes in and, much to his horror, apparently can talk to Voldemort, and it tells him that there's a muggle out in the hallway. Bad news.
Bad news for Frank.
Yeah, he wanted more than anything. And he's just like, why didn't I just stay in bed? Why didn't I just stay in bed with my hot water bottle? Right. Why didn't I let the house burn down?
It would have been fine.
It would have been fine. Yeah. Why didn't I just call the fire department? Yeah. But she says, according to Nagini, there's an old muggle standing right outside this room listening to every word we say. And if I'm Frank, I'm like, uh-oh.
Oh, no.
Oh, boy. And then Wormtail, he's quick on it. He runs to the door, flings it open, and finds Frank. And Voldemort says, invite him inside, Wormtail. Where are your manners? He was just so polite. Yep.
I like how Voldemort gets upset with him about his manners, like, so immediately. It's like, you didn't know he was there either.
I know, dude. Come on. Let's see. And then it says, the snake, on the other hand, was curled up on the rotting hearthrug like some horrible travesty of a pet dog. Which I love that description.
Yeah.
So creepy.
You remember the time your pet dog last looked like a snake?
Yeah. This is more like a pet cow that looks like a snake, apparently. The old cow snake, as it were.
Yes.
Yeah.
The fire was the only source of light in the room. It cast long, spidery shadows upon the walls. Frank stared at the back of the armchair. The man inside it seemed to be even smaller than his servant, for Frank couldn't even see the back of his head.
Mm-hmm. And now Voldemort starts questioning him. He says, you heard everything, Muggle. And he's like, literally everything. I did not miss one single word. All of it. Yeah. Now Frank starts to feel a little bit braver. He comes in the room. He says, you know, well, what are you calling me? A muggle? And Voldemort just like explains it to him. It means you're not a wizard. And he's like, I don't know what that means. whatever.
Not helping.
Not helpful.
I don't know what you mean by muggle or wizard.
Yeah. Could you explain both?
And then Voldemort's like, well, those are the options.
Yeah. It's like, what else are you having to tell you?
Yeah.
Yeah, either you have magic or you don't, bro. But he starts explaining, says, you've done murder and you're planning more. And I'll tell you this, too. He had it on sudden inspiration. My wife knows I'm up here, and if I don't come back, and Voldemort's just like laughing. He's like, yeah, right. Yeah. You have no wife. No one knows you're here. You told nobody. Do not lie. I always know. Except for Snape. Let's see.
Except for Snape, yeah.
Yeah, but this must be, like, extremely easy for Voldemort to just rake through this guy's mind. Like, he has no defenses at all. He's just like, yeah, I can read everything right off the front of your brain.
Yes, like, yes, yeah. Basically, Frank stands no chance, but he doesn't know that. So he's like, well, I don't think much of your manners, my lord. Turn around and face me like a man, why don't you?
Yeah. And this is also worth noting that Voldemort has not turned around yet either. So he's performing all this legitimacy without making any kind of eye contact.
True. Which Snape does say is important, but I don't think at any point in time anybody says is required.
Yeah, well, clearly it's not, because he's just doing it right here.
Right, right, yep.
And so he says, face me like a man, and he says, but I am not a man, Muggle. Which, if I'm Frank, I'm like, that's not good. That's not good.
He's a baby.
He's a man. I'm not a man.
I'm just a baby.
Can you? I would love it. He was like, but I am not a man, Muggle. And he's like, oh, sorry, miss. That's my...
My bad.
I'm much more than a man. However, why not? I will face you, Wormtail. Come turn around my chair. Like, oh man, doesn't invite him to come around. What's the big reveal?
Although this is a funny scene to watch unfold in your mind, because Wormtail really doesn't want to do this. You know, he doesn't. Yeah. He's like, I don't want to go near you.
Yeah.
Let's see. The small man walked forward and began to turn the chair. The snake lifted its ugly triangular head and hissed slightly as the legs of the chair snagged on its rug. To which I really can't help but imagine, like, you know, he's up there like...
Hold on. I got it.
We're getting there. There he is.
There he is. And then the chair was facing Frank, and he saw what was sitting in it. His walking stick fell to the floor with a clatter. He opened his mouth to let out a scream. He was screaming so loudly that he never heard the words. The thing in the chair spoke as it raised a wand. This is really cleverly just hiding the words of Avada Kedavra from you, which you, the audience, have not learned yet.
Yep. There was a flash of green light, a rushing sound, and Frank Bryce crumpled. He was dead before he hit the floor.
Mm-hmm.
200 miles away, the boy called Harry Potter woke with a start.
Oh, man. Crazy. Oh, it gives me chills. Yeah. There we go. And that's the end of the first chapter. Woo! We did it. Oh, my goodness. Oh, my goodness.
We made it.
We made it. We are in Goblet of Fire.
What a fun chapter. Things are just heating up.
I know.
This is going to be really fun. Yes. But guys, this is the part of the show where we would normally do a review, and answer one of the questions. But since we happen to have a live audience here, maybe you guys could let us know how did we do.
Pretty good. I think that's 5 stars.
Five stars. All right. Well, do you want to close us out then?
I can close us out here. So we're gonna do a little Q&A after this, but we gotta close the show for the sake of the recording here. So thanks everybody for joining us for today's episode. Make sure you tune in next week for chapter 2, The Scar, here on Through the Gryffindor.
Today's episode was edited by Ethan Edgehill. Vaishon Brandon does our art. Catherine Stein is our production manager, and the show is hosted by me and Jonathan Carlin.
At Kroger, an annual Boost membership just got even better. Now you can choose from Disney Plus with ads, Hulu with ads, or ESPN Plus on us when you sign up. Plus, enjoy unlimited free delivery, double fuel points, exclusive offers, and free items. Sign up for a Boost membership today. It's an easier way to save, including new streaming options to relax with while we deliver your groceries. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Y'all, I am so excited because Through the Gryffindor is heading back out on tour. Starting in February of 2025, we'll be performing live shows in Charlotte, Orlando, Tampa, Jacksonville, Atlanta, and Nashville. And as always, we will be bringing all of the magic with a tour-long Jay versus Ben trivia showdown with questions submitted and asked by all of you. And then, of course, we will dim the lights for a live recording of Through the Gryffindor. And y'all, these nights have made for some of my all-time favorite since we have started making content on the internet. It is truly a magical evening, nerding out Harry Potter style with the very best community online. Plus, we have a VIP upgrade for each show if you want to come and meet Jay and I, take photos, ask questions, and score an exclusive signed tour poster before the show begins. We would love to see you. We'd love to meet you, and we hope you will come and join us for all of the fun. Tickets are available in the show notes for every show or at supercarlinbrothers.com.